Longevity. That means how long your life is. Shri. Opulence. Kirtihi. Fame. Aishvaryam. Power. Ashishaha. Benedictions. Purushasya. Of the living entity. Yaha. Which. Vavanti. Arise. Eva. Indeed. He. Certainly. Tatkale. At that proper time. Yata. Just as. Anichaho. Of one not desiring. Viparyayaha. Reverse conditions. So translation. Just as a person not inclined to die must nonetheless give up his longevity, opulence, fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by his mercy. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. It is not good to be falsely puffed up, saying that by one's own effort one has become opulent, learned, beautiful, and so on. All such good fortune is achieved through the mercy of the Lord. From another point of view, no one wants to die, and no one wants to be poor or ugly. Therefore, why does the living entity against this will receive such unwanted troubles? It is due to the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one gains or loses everything material. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent on the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Lord. There's a common saying in Bengal that the Lord has 10 hands. This means that he has control everywhere, in the 8 directions and up and down. If he wants to take everything away from us with his 10 hands, we cannot protect anything with our 2 hands. Similarly, if he wants to bestow benedictions upon us with his 10 hands, we cannot factually receive them all with our 2 hands. In other words, the benedictions exceed our ambitions. The conclusion is that even though we do not wish to be separated from our possessions, sometimes the Lord forcibly takes them from us, and sometimes he showers such benedictions upon us that we are unable to receive them all. Therefore, either in opulence or in distress, we are not independent. Everything is dependent on the sweet will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So again, Ayu Shri Kirti Haishvaryam Ashisha Purushasya Yaha Bhavant Yeva Hitat Kale Yatani Chor Viparya Yaha. So, Om Ganata Miranda Shah Gudanjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this principle of Krishna giving everything and taking everything away is on the material platform and also on the spiritual platform. On the material platform, it occurs due to karma. Just like last night, Maha Singh was asking a question about the heavenly planets. He was very interested in going to the heavenly planets. He said, "Please, Maharaj, tell us about the heavenly planets." I don't know why that question came up, because we're really interested in hearing about the opulences there. And of course I said to him, I said, "So maybe you're interested in being greeted by all the apsaras, you know, or if you're a Muslim, you're greeted by all the celestial virgins, right? Same thing. Are you interested in that?" And he said, "No."
So, and do you know that in the heavenly planets, as Krishna says in the Gita, Shine Punya Marcha Lokam Vishanti, that when your good karma runs out, you're kicked out. And then also in the heavenly planets, you're continually harassed and attacked by the demons. There's anxiety there. Actually, if someone has an anxiety, they can't be happy, even if you give them tremendous opulence. I mean, I've experienced, because in the management of the Krishna conscious movement, sometimes you get an anxiety, isn't it? Just like when Vishwanath was temple president here, he was in tremendous anxiety. Now he's in ecstasy. But anyway, the because people think, temple president, everybody is thinking, oh, I want to be temple president. But when you're temple president, you're thinking, how can I get the heck out of here? So it's actually quite interesting. So the point is, when you're in anxiety, you can't enjoy. Someone can put in front of you the most wonderful plate of prasadam, like mangoes and all sorts of wonderful things. And if you're in anxiety, you can't even taste it like that. I remember many years ago, I was in charge of a temple, and the temple was in so much debt that I developed ulcers thinking about the financial situation. You know what ulcers are? Ulcers are when your stomach acid is very strong and it's eating away at your stomach. So all I could take at that time was milk, because that sort of soothed the stomach. So really, you know, happiness doesn't come from all the material things that you have. In fact, we were talking about this last night a little bit, that there was this one interesting film. Yeah, the name of the film was Happy. If anyone's interested in a copy of it, I can give them a copy. It's on my computer. But it was analyzing why people are happy. And it turned out one of the happiest people was a rickshaw wala in Calcutta who pulled the rickshaw by hand. Not even bicycle rickshaw or motorized rickshaw, but he pulled by hand. So why was he happy? Because, and he wasn't handsome, he wasn't rich, he wasn't powerful. And people were yelling at him all day long, pull faster! Pull faster, you rascal! You know, if you're a rickshaw wala, generally you get yelled at. And he was happy because when he went home, his family was there, his neighbors were there, all these nice things were there. Because that's, Prabhupada said, society, friendship, and love, divinely bestowed upon man by God. So that's even material happiness, it's like that. And so he was enjoying, of course, in modern society, as we develop more and more technology and systems of transportation, people live further away from their families. So there's less happiness. They have more things like, like iPhones and electronic gadgets. I was just reading, they just came out with the latest iPhone, the 5C or something like that. And people were lined up for days to buy it. And not only were they lined up for days to buy it, that when it came time to open up the store, there were riots. And these aren't just like poor people, you know, who are just like looking for food. I mean, these are people who can afford this sort of gadget. I mean, this sort of gadget in America costs like $800, American dollars, which is like 1,600 Fijian dollars. So these are rich people. But they were beating each other up. The police had to come and break it up using tear gas and everything like that. Just because they wanted this stupid little thing. They wanted to be the first at buying it. I mean, they could have waited a week. There's no problem. You just wait a week or you order it online, internet, and you get it in your house. But they wanted to be the first, or one of the first to have it and go home and show it to everybody. Is their trophy iPhone. It's like a trophy. You want to show it off to everybody. So it just caused anxiety. They weren't happy. Or let's say someone wants to marry an extremely beautiful girl. They call those trophy wives, too. You ever hear that expression before? Like a Bollywood star or something, like actress. And but then you're always in anxiety, because Chanakya Pandit says A beautiful wife is an enemy at home. So it's not to say that all you ladies are ugly, but anyway, so. But Chanukya Pandit says that because then you're always being anxiety. There's other people looking at her, and because she's so beautiful, she can control you. You understand? You understand what I mean? All she has to do is wave her eyebrows and say, Pati, can I have some money? And then all the money goes. Anyway, so you see this opulence. The point I'm making is all this opulence, whether you're beautiful. It's anxiety. Just like I mean, let's say a man is very handsome or a Bollywood star. I was with Vivek Oberoi several times, and he was surrounded by these paparazzis. Paparazzi means the photographers are always taking pictures of you no matter what you do, even if you go into the toilet. I mean, they're following you in there. It's true. You have no privacy. You go to the beach. They're taking shots with these big telephoto lenses that are this big. So they're taking pictures of you, your wife, and everything like that. So he's continually having to show off for everybody, you know, twisting his mustache for everybody. And so this is anxiety. Who wants to be surrounded by people just all the time doing these things? Even sometimes as a guru, you know, people come and they touch your feet. And I'm thinking, why can't I walk normally like everybody else? You know, I have to just like stumble as everybody's trying to grab your feet. So, but from the outside, it appears to be something very attractive. Like if someone else looks at it, they'll say, oh, you're enjoying people touching your feet. Or you're enjoying people taking pictures of you all day long. Or you're enjoying being so handsome or beautiful, or you're enjoying, but actually it causes anxiety. Bhukti mukti siddhi kam, sakalaya shanta. If one has bhukti, material things, bhukti, that's like bhoga, you know, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam. If one has these material things, then it simply causes you more anxiety. Like Sanatana Goswami, when he left, the employment, he would escape from jail, of course. His servant Ishan had 8 gold coins, and they arrived at the at an inn, that means a hotel, and the innkeeper, by dint of his friend's astrology or mystic powers or something, understood that Sanatana Goswami's servant had 8 gold coins. And so he thought, I'll make believe that I'm nice to them, I'm going to help them cross the mountains. But actually, my plan is to kill him and take the 8 gold coins. So, Sanatana Goswami, being intelligent, understood that when someone is very nice to you, it's not that they love you. It's that they want something from you. Like if you go to work and your boss is very nice, Gokul, you know, you're just such a great employee, you're just so wonderful. Then you understand he just wants me to work tonight. It's like that. I mean, you even learn techniques for management. It's called the one-minute manager, where you're supposed to praise someone, you know, correct them a little bit. Praise them first, correct them a little bit, and then praise them at the end. That's called the one-minute manager. And actually, any intelligent person will understand what you're doing after a few times. So, it's like that. That all these things, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam, bhukti mukti siddhi kam. One has material enjoyment, or even impersonal liberation, or powers, just like one may think. It'd be great to have mystic powers. Nowadays, people adore these superheroes. That's the modern version of a mystic yogi, right? Like nowadays they have this, you've heard of this Superman. Even here in Fiji I've seen people walking around with a big S on their shirts, like Superman outfit. Even in Fiji they do this stupid thing. And so, and I even have one disciple who walks around with a Spider-Man outfit, you know. Many of you met him. He's Gopal, little Gopal. Some of you met him. Yes, some of you met him. Anyway, and so that's a modern version of having mystic powers without doing the austerities. But it just causes you anxiety. I mean, what are these mystic powers? Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kam. Sakale Ashanta. It makes one Ashanta. That means not peaceful. Anxiety. The more you have, the more anxiety you have. The more possessions you have, the more anxiety you have. And it doesn't bring you happiness. Where you have this story of Prahlad Maharaj talking to the Avadhuta who's just lying in the road. You know that story in the Bhagavatam? He's just lying in the road and he's questioning him and the Avadhuta is just like waiting for food to come into his mouth. He's not in anxiety. He's happy. He's blissful. He has an effulgence about him. So, in other words, so in order to teach us that material happiness doesn't, material goods or liberation or powers don't bring us happiness, Krishna arranges even for his devotees to be subjected to great difficulties and have things taken away from them, like Prabhupada is mentioning here. And this reminds me of the story of the Pandavas. The Pandavas continually, they would get a lot, then lose it, then get a lot and lose it. The Pandavas were born into a very important family. It's the Kuru dynasty. Actually, the whole dynasty is called the Kuru dynasty, although later on, when you say the Kurus, it indicates Dhritarashtra and his sons. But the dynasty is the Kuru dynasty. So they were born into this great dynasty. Yet shortly after they were all born, of course they were in the forest, their father was taken, their father passed away. Pandu passed away. And then they went back to the kingdom, and then there were so many plots against them, attempts to poison Bhimsen. Then they went to the house of Lak, and what happened is that, of course, they escaped, but then they had to take the guise of beggars, of Brahmins. And for a Kshatriya, that's embarrassing. For a Kshatriya, one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. For a Kshatriya to beg is considered very disgraceful. So they had to beg for a living as Brahmanas. Then finally, after some time, they come back, and then it's decided that they're going to be given half the kingdom, but the half the kingdom they've been given, Indraprastha, is actually a desert area. So they're giving a desert as their kingdom. And then Krishna and Balaram, especially Balaram, plows the land and the desert becomes flourishing. And by the mercy of Maya Danava, they get this assembly house that's the most beautiful assembly house on the earth. That water appears to be like land. Land appears to be like water. It's such a beautiful place. And then they hold the Rajasuya sacrifice. Rajasuya sacrifice is the sacrifice held by emperors, not just kings. If you want to be an emperor, that means you have to be the king of kings. And the way they indicate that is that they send this challenge horse around, and the challenge horse has to go around without being impeded by any king. And if the challenge horse is impeded, then they defeat that king. So Maharaj Yudhisthira becomes the king of kings, basically, the emperor of the earth. Really. And then you have the Kurus, headed up by Duryodhana, getting envious. Krishna arranges to get envious. Because first of all, when they did the Rajasuya sacrifice, Duryodhana was the one who counted all the donations. I mean, that's enough to make anyone upset. Your enemy. You imagine, you have your enemy. You open up a temple, let's say, and you have an enemy, and you say to your enemy, oh, you be the one during the temple opening that counts the money. I mean, that happened. And then also, Duryodhana, not understanding in the palace what was water and what was land, kept falling into the water. And the doors of this palace were magical too, that the doors of the palace were so crystal clear, they appeared to be openings. You understand? You couldn't tell there was a door. You thought it was just an opening to the outside. So he kept walking in and smashing his face, falling into the water, and at the same time, Draupadi is just laughing like crazy at him. And so, but this was Krishna's arrangement too. Krishna wanted him to get upset. So then eventually they have the gambling match and the Pandavas lose everything, even themselves. I mean, it's bad enough to lose everything, but even the Pandavas are gambled away and they lose themselves in the gambling match, and then they lose their wife in the gambling match. And then their wife is subjected to this horrendous, horrendous interaction with Dushyant, where Dushyant is attempting to disrobe her, and then Krishna provides, of course, unlimited sari to protect the chastity of his devotee. And then after the whole thing is over, there's two gambling matches. After the first gambling match is over, then basically Dhritarashtra says, all right, you can have your kingdom back. And Duryodhana is completely upset, and then he calls for a second gambling match. And in this gambling match, he sends the Pandavas in exile for 14 years. They have to go in exile, and the final year they have to be incognito. So in this way, I mean, they're sent out again, losing everything. And then Arjuna has to basically take the position when they're living incognito, with the most embarrassing position you can imagine for a kshatriya, being a eunuch. I mean, for a kshatriya, that is quite embarrassing, isn't it? I mean, even if I say to any of you, you're just a eunuch, I mean, you get angry. Or, you know, nowadays they say gay or something like that. You know, if I say to anybody, I'm not going to say it. Anyway, they'll just get angry. What do you mean? I'm eunuch. You have no masculinity. So Arjuna had to take this. I mean, imagine losing his self-respect, having to dress up like a Brihanella, dressing up a woman, being a dancing teacher for girls. I mean, I would never do that. Isn't it? Dancing, being a dancing teacher. I mean, Hare Krishna. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj having to be like a chess instructor. Bhimsen having to be the cook. Of course, he liked that. That was actually a benediction for Bhimsen, isn't it? Because he got to eat. So, anyway, so then the Pandavas lost everything, and then again, there's the battle, Kurukshetra, and they lose their sons. Can you imagine what they had to go through? I mean, this is really an illustration of what Prabhupada is talking here about in the verse. Their five sleeping sons were killed, and then the battle, everybody was killed, basically, except for a few people at the end. And then the Pandavas regain the kingdom. And also they lose their grandfather Bhishma. Arjuna had to kill his grandfather. Then they regain their kingdom. And then after all that, because basically Gandhari cursed Krishna that his dynasty would be destroyed, then after a few years, they lose Krishna. Can you imagine? If anyone hears the story of the Pandavas, they won't even want to be devotees. If you say, this is what happens to you when you join the Hare Krishna movement. In fact, the Pandavas, when they were glorified by Narada Muni as being great devotees, gave that argument. They said, we're not great devotees because anyone who hears our story doesn't want to be a devotee. Can you imagine? Up and down, up and down, up and down. So Krishna leaves the planet. And then when Krishna leaves the planet, the Pandavas give up everything. They march to the north. And one by one, they die. And Yudhisthira is marching with the Pandava, with the other brothers. And one of them dies because he was thinking himself the handsomest person on earth. That was Nakula. Another one dies because he ate too much. to Bhim saying, another one dies like Arjuna because he bragged that he would defeat an enemy in one day and it never happened. And Draupadi dies because she favored Arjuna. This is in the Mahabharata, tells the whole story like this. And then finally, Indra comes down to take Yudhisthira back to heaven, and Yudhisthira has been followed by this dog, which is actually Dharma anyway. And Yudhisthira refuses to go to heaven without the dog. But then Yudhisthira goes to heaven, then he sees his brothers in hell. I mean, just look at this. Like all these contrasts here. And he's tested in that way. Because he says to his brothers when he sees his brothers in hell that I'd rather be with you than be in heaven. Which is actually the point I was making in the beginning of the story, that if you're surrounded by people in loving relationships, then you're happy no matter whether you have opulences or don't have opulences. That's really what makes us happy. You know, having loving relationships. And ultimately, if one has that loving relationship with Krishna, then in any circumstance, one can be happy. And that's why Krishna does things to the devotees, like taking things away or giving things, to show you that the ultimate shelter is his holy names. I mean, I just got a letter from someone yesterday that they're in Europe, and they're in so much pain, they're getting cheated by this person and that person. They said, what am I supposed to do? And I said, the only recourse, the only solution, Bhavoshana Shotra Manobiramat, as it's stated in the 10th canto, first chapter, text 4 of the Bhagavatam. Nivritta Tarsha, Upakiyamana. Nivritta Tarsha, these pains in this world, can be solved by the remedy, Bhavoshana Shotra Manobiramat. The mind can become happy. Ka Uttama Shloka Gunanavara. By hearing about Krishna, Krishna's pastimes. I mean, I experienced that too, that no matter what else is going on in the world, if I can hear Krishna Katha, it calms my mind. It makes me happy. Even if the world is falling apart, everyone hates me, there's nothing, no money, no facility, my body's falling apart. That will happen. That's the time factor. Everybody's body will fall apart. Kalena sarvatra, gavira ranghasa. That is the indefatigable, that means in common English, the undefeatable time factor. That's it, kalena. And Krishna says, of course, in the Gita, kalo asmi. When you see the universal form, or Arjuna saw the universal form, and everyone was rushing into the mouths of the universal form, all the mouths. And Arjuna asked Krishna, who are you? And Krishna says, what? I am time. Kalo asmi. And also mrityu sarva harashchaham. I'm all devouring death. So that's the nature of things. Kautama shloka gunanavadat. Puman virajeta bina poshugnat. And the only way we're going to be able to take shelter of Krishna's names is if we're sinless. Because the statement in this verse is, the only people who are not attracted to Krishna Katha are those who are killers of the animal, poshugnat. But also, killer or violence can be defined, according to Srila Prabhupada, as impeding the spiritual progress of yourself or of others. Like if I stop or hurt someone's spiritual progress, in other words, I'll tell you how, we talk offensively. We start criticizing Vaishnavas. I mean, some people just have it as their whole life to criticize Vaishnavas. Like in the story of Ramchandra Puri in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Ramchandra Puri, his whole life was dedicated first to criticizing his spiritual master for remembering Krishna, which is kind of stupid. Madhavendra Puri was leaving his body and feeling separation, and this rascal said to him, please meditate on Brahman. And then he was just criticizing everyone, including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for eating too much. So that's violence. That's killer. You're a killer of the soul if you do that. A killer of other people's souls and killer of your own soul. So we avoid offending devotees. And then if we do that, we avoid the offenses, then we can take shelter of Krishna's names. Marobi Rakobi, Yoicha Tohara. In good fortune or bad fortune, we take shelter of Krishna's names. And Krishna arranges bad fortune so that we can just chant with great attention. Another point I made last night, we were talking about the heavenly planets. I said, if you went to the heavenly planets, I was talking to Mahasingh again, you would forget about chanting. You'd be surrounded by all these apsaras saying, he's mine, he's mine, he's mine. And you'd take your japa bag and say, don't need it anymore. Because Ishwaroham Ahambogi, said Oham Balavansaki, I'm perfect, powerful, handsome, whatever. That's the problem with material opulence. Therefore, Queen Kunti says, Janma Ishwariya Shutusha, Shutasha Shibir, Enamana Da Puman. These things can impede our Krishna consciousness. So Krishna arranges circumstances for our own spiritual advancement. So anyway, this is the point here. This Vritrasura, who is actually talking here, this Vritrasura is well aware that his situation in the body of a demon is actually a benediction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that, I mean, he was a pretty ugly demon too. Some demons are handsome, like Ravana was quite handsome, but he was ugly. And that's actually a benediction. So anything that happens to us that is unfortunate, then that is actually a benediction from Krishna. If people start talking behind our backs, if you develop some disease, then it's Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, when his business went bankrupt, his wife was completely averse to his preaching Krishna consciousness. Yashaham anugrinami harishe tandanam shanai. Prabhupada was fond of quoting that verse. That if I especially favor someone, I take away things from that person. And then he just chants Hare Krishna because that's all he's left with. Hare Krishna. Of course, we're not saying that people should voluntarily put themselves in a state of poverty. Prabhupada said we need opulence, money, prestige to spread our movement. So we're interested. For that reason, even a sannyasi is interested in having a good reputation. Because Lord Chaitanya said when he was offered sandalwood oil to rub his body by Jagadananda Pandit, he said, you know, if I take this sandalwood oil, everybody's going to think I'm a Dari sannyasi. That means a sannyasi who keeps women. So he was very concerned with reputation. So for preaching, yes, we are very interested in material opulence, but not for ourselves. So, but one has to be very expert to engage in that sort of yukta vairagya. Prabhupada said it's like trying to catch a big fish without getting wet. Of course, you shouldn't go fishing. Don't do that. But it's like that. Yukta vairagya, I mean, being in contact with attractive elements of this material world, very, very dangerous. But one has to do that for Krishna. Just like traditionally, sannyasis, they couldn't cross oceans. They just had to stay in a secluded place. They just couldn't wear sewn clothing because the clothing would be sewn by ladies. Did you know that? They couldn't even have hems made on their dhotis. Hem means like this little, you know, hem on the dhoti, because that would mean sewing. So they just really had to be austere. So nowadays the sannyasis have to travel, preach, take airplanes, preach to the ladies, eat opulent food maybe. I don't. But anyway, wear nice clothes like this. But that's yukta vairagya. But one has to be very careful, because the mind can be deviated very, very easily by material opulence. Janmaishwarya Shrutasya Shibir can be deviated by dealing with money. I mean, sannyasis have to deal with money. Sannyasis nowadays, they have credit cards. I mean, I have a credit card. How else am I going to travel around the world? You know, call the airline and say, please donate a ticket to me? Would that work? You know, Fiji Airways, you know, Hare Krishna, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. So can you imagine? Can you imagine sannyasis 400 years ago looking at sannyasis nowadays and thinking, these people are in Maya? And sannyasis with iPhones. But so it's very, in other words, it's very dangerous, because you can get caught up in the opulence, but the opulence is absolutely necessary to preach Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how could we preach if we simply had no shoes? I mean, some sannyasis nowadays, they even go back to the past and wear these shoes with the little, what do they call those things? With the thing between the toes, the big wood, like you have for Prabhupada. Incidentally, Prabhupada never wore shoes like that. It'd be better to have other shoes for Prabhupada, because Prabhupada never wore those things. Even when Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur went around Govardhan, they wore shoes or sandals. Because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, my feet are meant for preaching. So that's a very interesting statement. So anyway, we engage in yukta vairagya for preaching. Preaching is the essence, books are the basis, purity is the force, utility is the principle, but we have to be careful. So, any other questions, or any questions? We have about 2 minutes. Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, requests, disturbances, advice. I don't see anyone raising their hand. No. Questions? I heard in Nandi they ask questions all the time. Yes. Krishna's mercy. Whatever Krishna does, it's for the best. You may not appreciate, he's like a good parent that spanks you sometimes. You know, spanking? You may think, I mean, just like when I was young, I always give this example, my mother would spank me, I hate to admit it. And really hard too. And she said, I'm doing this because I love you. And I said, please don't love me. And other times I said, if this is love, I'd hate to see what hate is. So she trained me up, which is good. I mean, I think she did a relatively good job. One time I came back from school and I had learned some bad language. And I started to use these words at home. You know, like four-letter words. You know, the kids pick these up. You know, I was just a little kid, like 8 years old. He said, hey, Mom. He said, where did you learn this stuff? I said, it's school. And then I did it again, just to show off. And she said, you're coming, you're going to get your mouth washed out because you have a dirty mouth. So she took me in the bathroom and rubbed my teeth with soap. I can still taste it now. But you cannot get me to say any bad words, because as soon as even a thought comes in, I taste that taste again. So that's training. I'm not suggesting the mothers do that today. I mean, I think that's a little radical. But at the same time, it was done out of love, concern. It wasn't done out of hate. So Krishna sometimes does that. You know, he rubs our face in the dirt when we get too proud. Krishna takes away your pride. So we have to be careful. It's better that voluntarily we deal with our pride rather than having Krishna deal with it. But Krishna does that. It's interesting. Every time, I've experienced every time I start to get a little proud, thinking I'm the doer, kartaham iti manyate, Krishna shows me you're just a rascal. That's his kindness. He's just like my good mother. Sometimes I don't understand why he's doing something, and sometimes I say, Krishna, please take care of someone else for right now. It's like even when I was young, I would try to blame my brother for everything bad. And so the same way I said, look, he's worse than me. Krishna, he's worse than me. You know, why don't you give him a hard time? You give me a little break here. But Krishna doesn't listen. Okay. I guess if there's no other questions on that happy note, all glory is to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.